Hi, I'm William Tullett from Anglia Ruskin University in Cambridge.
And I'm Hannah McCann from the University of Melbourne in Australia.
And welcome to the Pandemic Sensory Archive, a collection of voices from sensory experts on the fate of the five senses during and after the COVID-19 pandemic.
This project has been sponsored by the British Academy, and we hope that you enjoy the interview.
So, welcome back to the Pandemic Sensory Archive. Today, I'm joined by Kate McLean, who is a fantastic scholar working on smellscapes and smell mapping, among other things. So I wanted to start, Kate, by asking you if you could introduce yourself, you know, what you work on and kind of what your expertise is when it comes to smell.
Thanks, Will. That's a very lovely introduction from you. So my background is within visual communication. And I became fascinated by the sense of smell in terms of how we might use different forms, especially visual communication, to communicate what it is as human beings that we're actually smelling. And so with that, what I do is I tether smells to particular places to acknowledge the importance of context in human perception of smell. And I do that through mapping, which is that's where the sort of like the term smell mapping comes into being. And so I use a technique, a methodology, which is called the smell walk, where I invite local people, a local population to go out and sniff their neighbourhoods, ask them to name the smells and to record the intensity and the duration and how they feel about those smells and to make notes about it. And I then have created a series of symbols by way of which I can then pinpoint those smells, and you can see them in relation to a given context, a town, a city, an island, or a particular place.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess this kind of attempt to try and visualize smells and thereby to pin them down is a kind of an age-old problem that people have struggled with, you know, for a very long time, particularly in disciplines like sanitation and public health, where the problem of mapping smells has been there kind of since the 18th and 19th centuries, but no one's been able to kind of deal with it very successfully. And I wondered, you know, before the pandemic, kind of what are the kind of challenges you face in doing smell walks and engaging with smell mapping as a kind of a technique and a methodology?
Just take you back sort of like a small stage and sort of like and go back to the sort of like the smell maps of different eras, because in terms of odour monitoring, sort of like especially in the 1800s, there are a number of maps that do show smell, and they do it in a really quite sort of passionate and informed way, by way of sort of like showing brown clouds and miasmas or directed arrows with sort of like words labeled over the top about where the smell has come from and where it's gone to. So there is a sort of like there's a bit of a history in actually looking at that idea of smell mapping that has got largely a negative connotation. So I think there's sort of like another important point to come in here is that my work really doesn't seek to judge whether it's a good smell or a bad smell. It hasn't got a particular agenda behind it. It's more about sort of like recording the everyday smellscapes of today. And then sort of like then just to move on to the part about smell walking, it's when I collect groups of people up to do smell walks, they quite often start by saying, oh, I haven't got a very good sense of smell. And so I think one of the main challenges that I deal with or dealt with is actually reassuring people that there's a large difference between identification and naming. So I'm not asking them to sort of like pinpoint and say what's where. I'm more interested in how they actually start to perceive. And so being an educator as well, I sort of like, I can frame it within a realm of, well, I'm going to teach you a bit about how to smell. And in return, can you just sort of like record some of the things that you notice? And what that usually results in is a lot of very surprised people about the types of things that they can notice, and then they come together collectively after a period of 15 minutes, share in a group what they've actually noticed, and you start to understand which people sort of like smelled or sniffed the same things. So you end up with a discussion about smell, which is really quite interesting and wouldn't normally be remarked on. So I think that, I mean, that's one of the main issues with doing smell walks. Yes, the other one part of it, of course, is the willing suspension of disbelief on part of the participants that there is such a thing, and that it has a value to it.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, isn't it? Because when we think about those 19th century smell maps, the kind of stuff that Melanie Kuchel talks about in her book Smell Detectives, the kind of stuff that's going on in New York and Chicago with these kind of arrows showing wind directions and where kind of offensive trades are located in cities and stuff, this is all to do with, you know, often to do with bolstering the expertise and the kind of professional identity of sanitary officials or medical practitioners. And, you know, increasingly, particularly in the late 19th century, the kind of the noses of normal people are kind of ignored. And I guess that's why we've got to the point where, as you say, people will go, oh, well, I don't really have a very good sense of smell. You know, how could I possibly use my nose, you know, to sniff out my smellscape? My nose isn't educated enough or kind of skilled enough to do that. I mean, do you think that in the pandemic then, you know, has this kind of work been really, really difficult? I suppose it has, because, you know, it's just more difficult to bring people together. But are there other difficulties you faced in doing this kind of work?
During the pandemic, it has been impossible really to do smell walks unless it's with single people. So I've sort of like almost eliminated the group walk until recently. And it was only last month with a museum gallery opening again in the northwest of the UK that was able to do smell walks with groups of people. And it was great to see that there were so many people out willing to participate. And there was a noticeable, I think they became much more aware of their sense of smell, because when we met, we were inside a venue, and so everybody had masks on. And so as we walk outside to actually start the smell walk, that everybody took their masks off, and there was a real difference. They noticed the actual air quality around them. They noticed it was actually really remarked on. And it's quite rare that I've ever had that before. So in that sense, I think the sort of like the putting on and the removal of masks in the current environment makes people far more aware of that, the fact that they do have a sense of smell and it is important to them.
Yeah, that's really interesting, isn't it? I mean, do you think on your kind of individual, on the individual basis and on, you know, your own kind of walking and sniffing during the pandemic, do you think that the smellscape has sort of changed and shifted as well as people's awareness of their sense of smell changing?
The smellscape itself changed slightly when we were in lockdown, in terms of sort of like just general car emissions that tend to mask a lot of the other naturally occurring environmental smells around us were minimised. And I did a sort of like a personal project last summer, really concentrating on what I smelled around me every day. And that had a sort of like, it really did manifest. And I'm sure that, I mean, that there are many, many sort of like reports in terms of pollution monitoring from that period that show that sort of carbon monoxide and sulfur dioxide and nitrogen oxide, all of those levels were found to decrease globally, and particularly in cities. But with that, there was the, you're only allowed out once a day. And I haven't managed to sort of like come into contact with more than one person that sort of like went through it and sort of like said that at the end of it, she came out going, I actually really value my sense of smell. She lost it temporarily as a result of COVID. That's how she knew she had it. And I think there's a lot of very interesting work to be done in terms of how people regard their sense of smell now, if they have lost it temporarily and are regaining it.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point about how the disappearance of pollution perhaps made people more aware of their smellscape. I suppose there's or other smells within the smellscape that were formerly hidden. I suppose there's a parallel there with sound, in the sense that lots of people commented on things like bird song, which they could hear a lot easier because some of those kind of sounds that had blocked it out before were gone.
Yes.
But I also think there's an interesting parallel here with something like the smoking ban, you know, where the removal of the smell of smoke from lots of public venues in the UK, and of course lots of other countries have introduced smoking bans, therefore meant that people could smell other scents, not all of them nice necessarily.
Exactly, yes.
that had been kind of excluded or shadowed or kind of that they'd been prevented from sniffing before because of that overwhelming smell of tobacco. So I think
that's definitely the case. I also think this is sort of just based on the last series of walks that I was doing, sort of like very much at the start of June, end of May, start of June. There's much more of a desire to encounter green spaces. That may also be a sort of like a post-pandemic issue, or not issue, but sort of like something that's occurred, because during the pandemic it's sort of like that importance of daily exercise and getting out and finding spaces that are what Victoria Henshaw calls restorative environments became increasingly important. And so the recent smell walks, the town ones were interesting, but there was much more interest in the ones that actually went out where we were in sort of like green spaces, and especially near to sort of like the River Mersey, and in the parks, however small those parks were, those were ones where there was a much, much more comment about the smellscape. But there again, it was a bank holiday weekend, and there wasn't a lot of activity in the streets. So there are so many factors that come into play when you're talking about smell. It's very dangerous to generalise and draw conclusions from a series of 8 smell walks 1 year on from the last lot.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? I think you're right about that difficulty of generalising. But I think on the other hand, it's really interesting, isn't it, that one of the beauties of the smell walk as a technique is that, you know, as you were saying, you have that discussion at the end, which brings the individual and the group together. And sometimes I get a sense that there maybe is agreement, you know, on the meanings and the namings of particular smells. You know, people might differ on some, but there are some on which we can kind of agree.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, a lot of that comes from the adjectival use around the particularly nouns given to smells. So instead of having food just as a descriptor for smell, someone cooking dinner brings forward a whole different connotation for the people that are reading that smell note it retrospectively. It adds a sort of like a humanity to it. It's much easier to imagine. And I think that encouraging people to have those conversations around smell, which I then do as well with a smell visualizer, and getting the participants from the smell walk to re-record the smells that they had and add a color to it and add a shape to that smell experience. When they then start to talk about their smell walk, they've got a couple of tools. They've retranslated smells into words and retranslated the words and their experience into something visual, and then are retranslating that back into a narrative. And that's when you start to sort of like find out more about the meanings they associate, and also the richness that is behind something that may be a sort of like a couple of molecules if it's reduced, but in terms of lived experience is something far more powerful.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think one of the problems that we face when working with smell in all kinds of industries and in research is that it's that kind of comes back to that point about people not feeling that they have a very good sense of smell, not really having the tools or the skills or the vocabularies to be able to talk about smell in a meaningful way. And, you know, do you think that, you know, given that maybe the pandemic has increased our attentiveness to smell, that perhaps this will be a good thing for those that work with smell in all kinds of sectors, because people will just be using their noses more and be kind of better able, I guess, to describe their smell worlds?
I definitely think so, yes. Just the sheer fact that so much was made of the fact that you can detect if you've got something that is potentially very life-threatening simply by registering if you've got a sense of smell or not, meant that far more people were sniffing something on a regular basis. And the walk that I did with somebody who had COVID said she knew she had COVID because her daughter-in-law gave her a sprig of rosemary to smell, and she couldn't smell it at all. Mm. And she said that was it. And so, I mean, there's a lot of work going on with sort of smell training for people who are recovering anosmics due to COVID. And there's a lot of changing smells in changing smell detection, parosmia in sufferers from COVID. And so that sort of like that smell training is really important about actually just educating your nose on a daily basis and saying, okay, I'm going to smell lemon, I'm going to smell rosemary, I'm going to smell some things that I know what they smell like, in order to sort of like re-educate where your smell is directed and what that actually means to you and how you register it.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think as soon as you start to direct people's attention, and I think attention is what it's about really, to smell, they instantly begin to talk about it and they realise that smell plays all kinds of roles in their daily lives. As soon as you start to talk to people about smell, they go, oh yeah, I remember this particular smell from childhood, for example, where I used to live. I mean, thinking forwards then, do you think that, you know, the pandemic will transform our relationship with our smellscapes kind of in the future? Or do you think it's this kind of momentary kind of blip and we'll kind of maybe actually in the end go back to some of the kind of similar practices we had before?
That's an incredibly loaded and projective question. I'm not sure that I'm completely equipped to answer it. In my ideal world, I'd like to say that it's a chance for people that are working with smell, and there's an increasing number of people that are focusing and looking at that. Janu Pritchard is doing a PhD in Belfast, and she's looking at a series of notes and ideas for what she's calling a practice of deep smelling. And I mean, all of these are moves to probably re-engage a sense that we have quite often taken for granted. I don't expect monumental change, but I do think now's a very good time to actually call it out, to be actively involved in the field, and to make that known to a general public in an accessible way. A lot of the time, the worry that people have about smell is it's the remit of perfumers, it's the remit of wine enthusiasts, it's the remit of coffee aficionados, and it has a specialist vocabulary. And I think if anything, sort of like that a pandemic has actually taught us, it's that any of us can actually be involved with something as fundamental as smelling. And it is something that we all possess. And so my role in particular with this is to really draw attention to that and to make the work as public as possible.
Yeah, I think that's a really lovely note to end on. I think that kind of hope that people recognise that smell is, you know, an inherently, democratic thing, but it's something that we all share and are all able to use and should all be able to think with in our daily lives.
Yes.
So thank you so much, Kate, for your time. And we look forward to seeing what you do with the future post-pandemic smellscape.
Thank you very much, Will. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.